Hipotecarios Podcast, el mundo de la información en constante evolución.
Hipotecarios, ya estamos por acá nuevamente, es un gusto estar con todos ustedes, una nueva edición de Hipotecarios Podcast, y bueno, en esta edición intentaremos nuevamente hacer una sesión por ahí, Spanglish básicamente, inglés-español el día de hoy por nuestro invitado que tenemos, agradecer a quienes nos ven, nos escuchan, también mencionar por ahí que pueden activar los subtítulos en YouTube si ustedes desean ver esta transmisión, y también de igual manera mencionar que en este momento la transmisión irá con una traducción en la parte baja por ahí, estaremos trabajando con esta doble idioma por ahí, y bueno, apoyándonos también un poco de la magia de la inteligencia artificial, también estaremos trabajando por ahí, y bueno, iniciemos por ahí. Hoy me acompaña en este Hipotecarios Podcast nuestro buen amigo Santiago Villegas, y bueno, y con esto empecemos con la sesión en inglés. Hello Santiago, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me with you here today. I'm in Las Vegas, so I'm in the desert in the United States. Yeah, thank you so much. So the Internet Archive is a research library. It's a digital research library, but we also have a lot of physical materials as well. Many millions of physical books and audio recordings and collections in all different kinds of formats. The mission of the Internet Archive is, I think, pretty simple. The goal is to provide universal access to all knowledge. So, straightforward. simple, but pretty challenging as well. It's a great question. On any given day, the number changes depending on who you talk to, but we generally say a bit more than 100 petabytes of content. And I think the most recent count was over 800 billion web pages archived in the overall collection. And you mentioned and I'm talking slowly on purpose for the captioning.
Thank you, of course.
I'm trying to be conscious of the captioning. You mentioned the GIFs or the animated GIFs, and we actually have a special collection at the Internet Archive called GIF Cities, GIF. Cities, and it's a collection of a searchable collection of animated GIFs from the early internet. So it has a search bar, and you could search to your heart's content for any GIF, basically. So it would be archives or libraries or librarians. If you wanted to see what the early internet thought, would be a good picture of a librarian or technology or something like that. It's kind of a fun thing to experiment with. It's a great question. I think we're still trying to determine policy around that. I think there's been a lot of interest, in particular from companies, in using Internet Archive collections for that purpose. But to be honest, I think we're still trying to figure out the best way to move forward. in a responsible way, in a way that benefits the community and the, you know, patrons that we're trying to support. It is kind of a tricky area, I think, in particular with the training data, especially a lot of the private sector efforts. They're not very transparent about what training data they're using or not. And there are still sort of like pending issues around sort of copyright and training data as well. At least in the U.S., the legal questions around using the collections as a fair use in training data still seem sort of not necessarily solved. So we're I think my own personal opinion, right? So not the opinion of the Internet Archive. my own personal opinion is, I think that there are a number of uncertainties that still need to be addressed as the questions of sort of what's permissible and what's not permissible becomes more clear. Yeah. Yeah.
Not precisely, but we work with the technology as everybody, all the professionals in these moments, in this moment of our life. I think there is a interesting age in this moment, a moment of changes and transformation, digital transformation for all the libraries and everything. So I think the efforts of Internet Archive are very interesting. In the past session, two sessions ago, I think we have some colleagues that we are mentioning and talking about the Archive Search Compute Cube. That it's a very interesting proposal, very nice project. I don't know, Thomas, could you mention something, a little introduction about this project? And I think that we need to know a little bit more of this project. We are working with a lot of data. So yeah, Santi.
It's a great question. So ARCH, or the Archives Research Compute Hub, is a platform that we provide that aims to make it easier for researchers to do computational research, like in the field of digital humanities, with digital collections at scale. It's also meant to make it easier for librarians, archivists, museum professionals, make it easier for them to support researchers who want to do this kind of work with the, say, library collections. A fair amount of my work in my career as a librarian has been under this set of projects that I've referred to as collections as data. Initially that was like an advocacy project. It was kind of like, let's get people in our community together and engage with the question of, what if we were to begin to think of our collections as data? rather than as just sort of sets of physical objects that we store and that we scan, right? So there was a period of digitization when it started where it was kind of like, how do we make a copy, a digital copy of this physical book? And then how do we put it online? And then how do we create an interface to this thing that kind of simulates what it's like to hold a book in your hand? Simulated like page turning, and you can zoom in. And similarly with images, it was like, let's have the most high fidelity version of this image that we can in a browser, so we can see this picture in a browser, but which is fantastic. But a lot of the early digitization projects didn't consider what it would mean to provide access to the content, not just as copies of objects, but also as data sets that could be computed against with natural language processing or computer vision, or now AI. So that initially began as sort of like advocacy efforts of like bringing communities together to talk about what might be possible. And then that transitioned into another project where we received funding from a private foundation to give grants to other libraries, archives, and museums in the US to basically develop sort of like service models and infrastructural approaches to providing access to and supporting the computational use of library collections. So where does Arch come in? So where Arch comes in is that it kind of, it presents a solution that tries to address some of the common challenges that researchers or librarians encounter when they want to do computational research with library collections. Basically, it provides like a web-based tool that can be used to analyze digital collections, create smaller, more targeted derivative data sets out of larger collections, and also publish and preserve those data sets in, you know, in line with best practices and open science and so forth. But it basically does things like, you know, so for example, like if you were looking at a web archive collection and you wanted access to just like all of the full text material in tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of web pages because you had in mind wanting to do some kind of a text and data mining project, within Arch, there's just what we call a job where you click a button that says, get me the full text. And it basically runs a job that will then crawl through all of the web archive collection and then produce a derivative data set that a researcher can use or that a librarian could use or the librarian can hand off to a researcher. And one of the really cool things I think about Arch also is that it works on a like a multi-institutional collection basis. So it's like, you know, if you're a researcher and you're interested in, say, web archive collections of the COVID-19 pandemic, you could use Arch to derive data sets from web archive collections on COVID-19 from organizations in Latin America and the US and Europe, for example. So rather than having a workflow where you needed to kind of, you know, write to a librarian in four different countries and then have these threads of email chains where you're like, I want this. And then, well, what do you mean? Well, I would like this. And it's like, well, how much would you like? And it's sort of like this kind of like chain of communication. And it's difficult on both sides. It's difficult for the librarian to kind of navigate, and difficult for the researcher, a lot of frustration. So try and kind of help with that sort of workflow process as well. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. So so I guess it's like two or three different things. So Arch is a nonprofit paid service. That's the first thing. The second thing is just as a what's it called? Like a preview, I guess. We will be releasing in probably mid-February a free level of service within Arch that anyone can sign up for. It will enable the full functionality of the platform. It'll work with like a sandbox of 5 to 6 different kinds of collections, so that anyone can sign up, anyone can start using and experimenting with the functionality with real world collections. And we also have an open call for proposals right now that's specifically focused on providing full access to the service for organizations that are less well resourced. There's a call for proposals that's open now. The call for proposals ends on, February 26th. We hope that people on this call do consider applying. We'll be providing, extra levels of support to that group, the selected applicants, training from Internet Archive staff, and basically 1 year of free, full access to the platform.
That's right. Yeah, definitely. Thomas mentioned something that this project is not only for librarians. We have different researchers that are interested in work with this large scale of data with Arch. So who can be the correct person to attend to this and try to propose a project or something like that and work with this data?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a great question. Anyone really can propose. It could be a librarian. It could be a researcher. Potentially, it could be a student as well. We're pretty open on that front in terms of who can apply.
That's great. We have some projects on the past session and the episode 174. We have here to Dr. Emily Liner and, of course, our friend Rosario. They are working with different projects. A recommendation to see this episode. And additional to that, for people in Latin America, Thomas, what recommendations you can do to apply to this project?
That's a good question too. I think that what's going to be really interesting to us is to see in the application, applicants describe how they believe it will benefit them, or people that they work with, whether or not it's students or researchers. We just will want to see some evidence of positive impacts that applicants anticipate for the communities that they work with. Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sorry.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think that so anyone who uses Arch, they can publish and make openly accessible the derived data sets from the collections that they're working with. What we currently have implemented in the platform is just like a button that says publish. And so as a user, you have like, you know, any X number of collections, generate your derivative data sets. It could be the full text, it could be network visualization data, it could be what we call named entities, all different kinds of data sets that could be generated. You can then publish those. And basically then the user assigns some metadata to those data sets, you know, their name, possible project, and then they can also assign any number of open licenses. And then you hit publish, and then those get made publicly accessible at archive.org with persistent identifiers as well. So researchers, librarians can publish and make accessible as many of those research data sets as they want, like through the platform basically, and then share those with other people. Yeah. Yeah, the user can choose from, I can't remember how many it is, maybe 7 or 8 different versions of open licenses. So it's like CC0, I think there's an MIT license. There's a whole series of licenses. What they share in common is that they're all open licenses. So, yeah, so there's no ability to publish and say, like, only mine, you know, kind of thing. Okay. Sure. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that would be interesting to see. Yeah, I don't know if I had anticipated that, but I think that could be cool. Yeah. 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 Yeah, I think it could be interesting for sure. I think, you know, one thing to note is that Arch as it exists currently works with web archive collections. But I think, you know, another thing to note is that we're also in the process of actively developing Arch's capability to work with most other kinds of digital collections, right? So most of the jobs of like analysis and data set generation are currently focused on web archives. But we have a grant from a federal funding agency in the US called IMLS, where we have partners at libraries and universities. And what we're doing is we're expanding the capability of the platform to also work with, say, museum image collections and library archival manuscript collections as well. And kind of like similar to what I was kind of trying to, I always get excited about it. I say the multi-institutional capability is like we're developing the capacity for Arch to ingest or take in collections from any organization, and then to unify them in the platform so that whether or not you're a big organization or if you're a small organization, we're trying to make it easier for everyone to support researchers who want to do computational research. Because, you know, part of what we found or what I found in the past is that when you talk about computational research or digital scholarship or digital humanities, there's a tendency for it to feel out of reach for smaller organizations because they're like, oh my God, I don't have a digital humanities librarian. I don't have a digital initiatives something something person. And so with the platform, we're trying to make it really easy, particularly thinking of smaller organizations, for them to basically like be like, whoa, but I have this service where it's like, it's really easy for us to put our collections into this thing. And then Arch then just has a number of jobs in it that basically anticipate questions that researchers generally have about, wow, I see you have this amazing early 20th century photograph collection. I would really like to do some computer vision thing with this. Right. And it's kind of like, well, okay, let me look up what computer vision is. Okay. All right. Let's look at our collections. Okay. Like, how do we get the collections out of this platform into like a data set that the researcher can work with? Let's see. Do we have an API? Oh, no, we don't have an API. You know, and then it's kind of like goes through this whole process. And so basically, Arch will just like try and make it easier, similar to how it does with the web archives currently. For librarians to support researchers who want to do that kind of work with most of their collections, not just the web archives. So there is a way to just add collections to archive.org, but that would be like a separate path than what we're developing in Arch. So basically in Arch, like we're making it pretty straightforward for there to be like a web-based uploader for collections that's really easy to use. Or if the collection is larger or if there's more advanced capability, we'll also have an API for people to sort of programmatically upload collections. And then once it's there, we have high-performance computing as well that supports the computational work with collections at scale. So, you know, like hypothetically, if there were I don't know, like institutions across Latin America that had photograph collections that were of a similar theme, they could all upload to the platform, and then researchers could basically do analysis or derive data sets from collections in multiple countries, basically, or within the same country. It could be like multiple states within the same, you know, the same country or something like that. But yeah. 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 Yeah, it's a great question. So we I think one of the really positive things of being at the Internet Archive is that we own and manage all of our own storage and compute infrastructure. So it's not like Internet Archive sticker on top of AWS or on top of Microsoft Azure or whatever, you know. So it's a little more homegrown, I guess. But we like it that way. We have distributed compute and storage in multiple countries, and multiple parts of the United States. So in the US, in Canada, in Amsterdam, in particular. And we use various storage and high performance computing technologies to do what we do. Yeah. On the AI models kind of front, you know, one of the things that I've been trying to spin up as a project, if you're interested, is an effort to preserve open source AI. So, you know, basically, like as a collection development activity, right? We think, you know, we're librarians, right? To kind of think about like how to like what actually are like the component parts of open source AI, and how might we effectively preserve them for the future, keeping in term sort of like the long view, which is, you know, what we do as organizations. Right, where it's, you know, and I don't really know of many libraries or archives that are currently attempting to digitally preserve open source AI models. You know, we have surely a lot of efforts to make open source AI models available, but, you know, as there are problems with them or there are changes to them, a new one goes up. Right. And then it's like, what happened to the old one? and I think, like, in particular, given how ubiquitous these technologies are becoming and the potential that they have for doing good things and the potential that they have for doing bad things, that it's really important to history, to attempts at regulation and legislation, that we have the most complete record possible of the various versions of these models and the training data that are driving them. So that's an effort that I've been kind of trying to put forward, but kind of a, you know, it's a big effort to try and preserve all open source AI. No, I don't. No. Yeah, I hope not. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't think so. Well, I hope that it's more globally diverse, right? Because I think that a lot of what we see sort of mentioned in the news are like primarily AI innovation happening in the US and Western Europe. I think that's a shame, you know, especially when most of the most powerful products that are being generated are developed on the backs of knowledge produced not just by Western Europe and the United States, but by the world, right? So, you know, I think that I would hope that the future of the technological development is more globally diverse, is more globally inclusive. I think that you can see that some of the world's indigenous communities have come together in various like policy papers and statements of principles and so forth, of sort of rights that they want to retain in AI development. In particular, I think of something like the CARE principles, which I'm not sure how much of the audience is familiar with, but was sort of a rhetorical response to the FAIR data movement, where, you know, there were a group of primarily indigenous scholars and practitioners that were like, hold on a second, it's not just about findable, accessible, reproducible, interoperable, it's also about our autonomy, our authority to control knowledge that our communities produce, and to ensure that the product of any sort of technical advancement that is made based upon the knowledge that we produce does provide benefits to our communities. And so I think that that is going to continue to be very important. I've seen some people make comparisons between the way that various communities are reacting to AI now as being similar to how reactions started to propagate around Wikipedia, in terms of people being really excited and then being really concerned at the same time. And for me, my thought about that is, I can see some similarities, but I feel that there's quite a substantial difference, in the sense that Wikipedia from the beginning has always been an open knowledge project. it's never attempted to commodify itself and turn itself into a for-profit service. It's always been, through fits and starts, more and more transparent. So you can really see the good and the bad, right, of Wikipedia, as opposed to a technology that's being commoditized and sold around the world in a way that's like not transparent and is very black box and, you know, has significant potential, but also significant worry, and is not an open knowledge project, right? Yeah, I think that I think I have sort of like two initial ideas related to that. I think that one of the things that our library communities need to do better is to do advocacy and advocacy with our governments, basically with our legislators. I see professional library associations being not always well prepared to do that kind of advocacy. And so I would hope that we continue to go stronger in that space. And then I think in practical sort of like day-to-day terms, we just need more expertise and experience in adapting some of these larger AI models to perform well with specific use cases that we encounter in our work. So one of the things that I'm in the process of trying to develop now, fingers crossed we get funding to do it. If we do get funding, unfortunately, it is from a U.S. funder. And so they have us focus on the U.S. in terms of how we work. But a takeaway, I hope, is still useful. But basically, what we're proposing to do is to bring together a group of expert researchers and also librarians into a professional development like institute, where we'll also recruit expert teachers to teach researchers and librarians together how to adapt AI models to training data derived from minority community collections. So specifically working with like African-American collections, or in the US, Latin American collections, and to like fine tune them so that they perform in a responsible way, in a way that creates benefits, in a way that doesn't amplify biases against these communities, but in a way that actually enhances research and education. So it'd be very like practical, like hands-on experience in how do you take one of these big models that's a general purpose model, and how do you make it a specific purpose model?
Yeah, of course, we know you're passionate of this topic, and we are enjoying this conversation. Probably one question more, Thomas, thinking in this future, different media resources that we have in this moment, what could be the future of art? What will be the development? What will be the next step? What are you imagining of this project? How this could expand the world of digital collections? What do you think about it?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so we're just trying to make it the work of computational research, supporting it, doing it as easy as possible. That's basically the work that we're trying to do. Practically, what that means is that we're trying to develop the software so that it's easy, or as easy as possible for organizations of all different sizes to get their collections into the platform, and that the platform software also evolves so that it provides functions that work with many different kinds of collections, right? So most of the functions in the platform currently are based upon the experience of the Internet Archive and also a project called Archives Unleashed, which sort of kicked off Arch. And did a lot of the sort of development up until a couple of years ago. And then it kind of transitioned into a partnership between us. A lot of the way that, reason that Arch looks the way that it does now, like why does it generate full text? Or why does it generate network diagrams? That's purely based on engaging with librarians and researchers to understand, what are the common things that you try and do, but that are difficult? And could we create a sort of programmatic way to make that easier, right? So the future path is continuing to do that work, engaging with librarians and researchers and trying to develop functionality that addresses more problems, makes it easier. And then, of course, also trying to make it work with image collections, photograph collections, newspapers, manuscripts, all kinds of different stuff that researchers work with.
That's great. We hope that we can have more information in this project, in this beautiful project. I think that it's a good moment, Thomas, to invite all the people to call proposals, and to all the people here are listening, and the people that it's watching or listening during the next days. Please, could you invite to the people?
Yes, please, everybody apply. We'd love to see applications. Applications are due February 26th. The call for proposals is live on the Internet Archives blog. Perhaps the link could be added in the live stream or in the recording of the video as well in the description. That would be awesome, but we'd love to see applications.
Of course, we're going to put this the link in the description, of course. And this is the open invitation to join to this project. Come on, Santi, you have something to do.
I think it's a great question. I wrote a library community research agenda for AI a few years ago, just before the pandemic. And, you know, I kind of categorized the potential for AI in various areas, but some of them were just very much like description, discovery, access, right? Really just sort of like fundamental aspects of what we do. And, you know, one of the ideas that I've been putting forward is that AI could potentially help us with increasing access to collections through machine-assisted translation. Where we run into situations where we have collection holdings where maybe we don't have catalogers or staff who are fluent in Malay or Vietnamese or something like that, right? And so rather than just having a backlog of collections that you have no description for that just sit there, you know, maybe we could leverage, you know, some of these tools to generate not the most accurate translations, but at least a minimal translation. So a basic record could be created, and then those materials could then at least be discoverable. Because if they're not discoverable, then they're not being used. And if they're not being used, then, you know, how much longer are they going to exist? Basically, you know, if you take like the long view, you know, if you have some new administrator come in and they say, big boss, you know, they say like, oh, well, that, those backlogs haven't been used for 50 years. Let's move those out of here and create like a virtual reality space or something, right? Like it's so I think it could help with things like very sort of like fundamental, like known issues. It's not necessarily like perhaps the most flashy or exciting, but I think is actually quite impactful. I think in terms of like AI and, you know, Dewey classification and description and other things like that, I don't really see our approaches to like metadata creation and description going away. And I think the past is a little bit instructive, even the present, right? So a lot of library discovery layers that, you know, over the past 15 years, 20 years maybe, they shifted more and more to having like a search-like experience where they kind of tried to mimic Google, where there's just like a one search, you just type in things and then you get this response in the web page, and then you still see sort of on the left-hand side usually some faceted incorporation of the library metadata. But a lot of the orientation of the interaction with the information shifted to try and basically mimic the web. And I can anticipate something that's maybe more similar to where we have more of like a ChatGPT sort of experience for interacting with library collections. But as a researcher myself, I never completely rely upon just the search experience. I'm always surfing the subject headings and the marker, all going all the way down and then going up in the levels and going to this subject and going on like a hunt, basically, you know, still leveraging really valuable metadata and hierarchy. So I think that that will continue. I think that it needs to continue because frankly, I don't really see the AI continuing to improve without new data to inform it. Right. So if there's a future where, say, we stop producing metadata ourselves, then how does the AI continue to work? Yeah. Yeah. We need text, and we need like structured data, right? And it's like, if you think about the descriptive metadata that we create, it's essentially training data, right? Where there are values, and then we're saying like this thing means this, right? So it's a bunch of just like we haven't thought about it as training data in the past, but to a computer, that's like, or to an AI model, that's highly valuable content. So, you know, rather than having sort of training data development where you have a bunch of humans go through and just like try and be like, well, that's a bird and that's a this. It's like, we've already done that, We've already done that, and we've done it for hundreds of years, right? Yeah. 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 So I'm from California. I'm from the Bay Area near San Francisco. And so I like baking sourdough bread. That's what I like doing. There was a thing where people are like, oh, this is a pandemic thing where people learn how to make sourdough. I'm like, no, I'm from the place where they make sourdough. It's not a pandemic thing. It's not some sad hobby that I developed. It's part of my background and upbringing. So I really enjoy making the sourdough bread. And I also sometimes enjoy trying to teach my dog how to do things, but you know, he's very cute, maybe not so smart. So, you know, depending on the day, it's fun, a fun hobby, and other times not fun.
Madrid, of course. Thank you, Thomas. It was a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for your time. We hope that that could be the beginning of a series of sessions. We're going to invite you to the next, probably with a session talking about the artificial intelligence, as Santi mentioned. So thank you very much. Thomas, please, your final comments, and thank you. Yeah, that's right. Next Friday.
All right. All right. Thank you both. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.